I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Elke Doerr. Her film is called Stories of Wolves, The Lobo Returns, and it screens this Friday, the 28th of October, here in Santa Fe at 7 o'clock. There's a reception also at 5:30, and then the film is at 7, and it's at the State Land Office at 310 Old Santa Fe Trail. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So you grew up on a farm with animals, and there's a story that you have from your childhood about wolves.
Yes, I grew up on an organic farm in Germany, and we have little plots of land and a few little plots of land, and I always joke and say they're the size of a living room, and they all have names. And so one day my grandpa and I were walking along, and he was telling me all the names of the little plots of land and fields, and then he said, and this is called the wolf trap. And I said, wow, why is it called the wolf trap? And he said, oh, don't worry about it. He said, our ancestors killed the last wolves here so you and I would be safe. And instead of feeling safe, I felt this sense of loss, like I had lost a friend. And I was really disappointed because I was hoping it was called the wolf trap because there were still wolves around.
Right.
And I said to him, where are they? Where are they? But he just told me that there weren't any more wolves around. And later on when I looked it up, I think they had killed the last wolf in Germany in 1861 or 1860, so well over 100 years before I was born. And I looked at my grandpa really upset, and I said, you know, I'll bring him back, Grandpa. I'll bring him back. And he said, why would you want to do that? We worked so hard on exterminating them, and now you want to bring him back? That doesn't make sense.
And so years went by, and you ended up here in the United States, and you became involved with the whole situation of wolves here in the Southwest.
Yes, I did. And I moved to the U.S. precisely to be with wild animals. It was, my choice was either Canada or the U.S. because I wanted to live in the west of Canada or the U.S. just to be where there were still wild animals. And I have been hiking in the Gila for the past 20 backpacking for the past 23 years, and when I heard that they were going to reintroduce wolves into that area, I was really happy. But it didn't go that well, and so I decided to do something to aid in the recovery of the wolves.
And you actually had a dream that pushed you toward making a film.
Yes, I did. When I had the dream, I was in Berlin, and there are many modern buildings, and I was really pining away for New Mexico. I wanted to go back to New Mexico, and one night I had a dream, and in my dream I was in a very sterile building. It was all chrome and metal and marble and forced air and no animals and no plants, and people were walking around saying, isn't this great, isn't this wonderful? And I, in my dream, was looking for the exit and was looking for animals. And I said, I need to get out of here. I need to be with the animals. I need to be with the wild animals. And the other people were saying things like, yeah, but that's why we built this, so we would be safe from them. And I'm like, no, no, I need to be with the animals.
So it's the same thing all over again.
Yes.
Basically, it's like a life theme for
mm-hmm.
you.
Yes.
And you started making this film. And, I mean, we've covered the story of wolves many different times on this program, but I think there's a few things that are important to talk about, which is just the basic question of why are wolves so important besides the fact that we might like them, but for in terms of ecosystems.
I dedicated a whole chapter to that, the wolves, you know, and I called it vital to key to wolf recovery, the wolves' role in the ecosystem. They are very important because they have found now in Yellowstone that with the return of the wolves, everything else returned. Because wolves take out the old, sick, and weak ones of a herd of deer and elk, so they keep the herd strong. They keep them moving, which means they always have to look over their shoulder for look, watch out for them. So they have to move. They can't just stand around and browse and eat everything and nibble at everything.
And
so
if they do stand around and eat everything and nibble at everything, it actually damages those areas
yes.
where they're nibbling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like clear-cut nibbling. But if the if the wolves are around, they keep moving, and then they're much more mobile, and there's more underbrush around, there's more willows and cottonwood and aspen. And then with that, there's more birds, there's more little animals. They've also found that wolves keep the coyote population in check, and so there's more rodents because there's not that many coyotes eating all the rodents. So,
and wolves don't eat the rodents?
They do eat them too, but then, you know, I think there's a smaller population of wolves. You know, wolves eat rodents in the winter when they can't get deer and elk, and when there isn't any new life, maybe on the elk haven't returned yet. They do eat rodents. I was out in wolf country one day in the spring, and I found wolf scat, and all they had eaten was rodents. So
right.
They do, but I guess there would be fewer coyotes and so more rodents, and because wolves need a bigger territory, you know, so there wouldn't be too many wolves. There would still be room for rodents and all the other animals.
It's just yet another example of these cascades of that happen within ecosystems. The presence of one animal has an effect on so many other animals and so many other plants, even if it's not a direct. It might be one or two or three levels of remove.
That's true. Everything is interconnected, and now we are finding that out. But I was in Canada about 23 years ago, and I was on some tribal land, and tribal people were talking about the wolf's role, and they said, you know, whatever happens to Brother Wolf will happen to all of us. Watch him. And they would also say that wolves are the police of the forest. So they keep everything in check. They keep everything healthy. So it's been a known fact to a lot of tribal people that now our scientists are documenting.
Right, exactly. We're talking to Elke Dürr about her film Stories of Wolves, The Lobo Returns. The population of wolves in the Southwest was so small that it got down to what, 5 wolves or 7 wolves, something like that?
Yeah. 7 wolves are the ancestors of our Mexican gray wolves now.
Amazing.
Yes.
And it was the Endangered Species Act that allowed those 5 wolves to be preserved and then to reproduce.
Yes, exactly. What most people don't realize is that there are different species, subspecies of the gray wolf, and our Mexican gray wolves are the most endangered subspecies of all the gray wolves. They're actually the most endangered land mammal in all of North America.
Wow.
Because there's only 50 left in the wild right now. And they're just recently, they recently got started reintroducing them into the wild in Mexico. And there were 5 releases on, I believe it was the 11th of October.
Do wolves cross the border?
Actually, that's a great that's a great question, because wolves are also migrating with the herds of deer and elk, and borders historically are really detrimental to that migration. And they don't know about border, and actually to have a viable population in the wild again, we really would need to do away with the borders, to have our wolves go down and them come back up and do their thing and start form packs and search for territories. So borders are really tough. It's the same in Germany. Historically, wolves came from Poland into East Germany, swimming across the border river there. But during communism, when the border was heavily guarded, they shot all the wolves.
Oh,
so
goodness.
Yes. So when communism fell, basically 21 years ago, they allowed the wolves to swim across the river again, and it wasn't heavily guarded anymore. Now they have about 25 to 40 wolves in eastern Germany, and they go back and forth because they, of course, have no concept of border.
Exactly.
They just have to go.
Now, one of the ongoing problems has been the conflict between wolves and ranchers and the majority of public land in the wolf reintroduction area in New Mexico is permitted to people who are ranching, who are grazing livestock there. And there's a really awful, sad story of a rancher who had a farm animal that was eaten by a wolf. And then he called the authorities. They said there are no wolves. So he had his dogs put down, his wonderful, beautiful dogs who had grown up with his whole family. And it turned out it was a wolf and that he put his dogs down for nothing. And those are the kinds of problems that give the pro-wolf people a bad name and make it even more difficult for these coexistences of ranchers and wolves.
Well, that's true, but that was at the very beginning. And I think things have really changed since then. There's a lot more collaboration. I think that whole reintroduction was a new thing for the ranchers because they hadn't had any wolves for over 25 years. For the agencies reintroducing them, for everybody, I think there was a lot of navigating to be done. And I think the authority, agencies weren't aware of the wolves being in that area, so they said there weren't any wolves. And so there are these stories, but there are also stories of successful coexistence. And that very same rancher that had that experience now, you know, is implementing different ranching strategies and hasn't had a depredation in years. So hasn't had any dead cows from, you know, wolf depredations. So it turned into a good story after all. But I think at the beginning there was a lot of charged emotions and there were some mistakes being made, but things evolve, and they have.
Yeah, I mean, it was heartening to see that same guy was able to take it all in stride and make changes and see the value. And there are people in your film who really do see the value of wolves in the ecosystems for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that people do is, as I learned in your film, is they make, what is it called? Predator-friendly wool.
Yes.
Uh-huh. What's that all about?
Yeah. That's when ranchers and farmers have learned to make an economy out of the wolves instead of a problem. That's how it was explained to me. They have learned to coexist with the wolves and with their livestock. And because there are wolves in their vicinity of their livestock and they're coexisting with them, they can sell their wool, for example, and their wool products as predator-friendly wool, and people all around the world will pay extra to buy these garments so that the wolves can coexist with the sheep.
Very interesting. So where are we at now? I mean, it's not that everybody in southern New Mexico is just a smiling, friendly wolf lover. I mean, there are still real animosities.
Yeah, you have the broad spectrum, and usually when wolves come into play, then it's very either love or hate, and not much in between. And yes, there's still a lot of work to be done, and the wolves are not out of the woods yet.
Or in fully in the woods.
Exactly.
Yet.
And they really need our help to make a stand for their survival. And you know, one of those things is education. You know, because with the early settlers came Little Red Riding Hood, came the Three Little Pigs, and this binary view of either cows or wolves, vegetables or weeds, you know, so nothing in between. Again, it's very either or. And so wolves had to go because they didn't fit into, you know, that model. And also there is still a lot of fear around and, you know, fear towards the wolves. And I was looking into that because I thought, where does it come from? You know, how can we dispel it? Is it, you know, what do we need to be really informed about them? Because they do have wonderful teeth and they could kill a human being.
I mean, there are so few of them in New Mexico, but let's say they recovered and there were many, many roaming packs of them. I wouldn't want to meet up with them on a dark night.
There wouldn't be many roaming packs because wolves never overpopulate because they go with the prey base. If there's enough to eat, then they procreate. If there's not enough to eat, then they won't have puppies. So that's one of those notions that we have, you know, thousands and millions of wolves lurking in the woods. No, that's not the case because they would, you know, if there were that many wolves, they would eat everything and then they would starve.
Right.
So actually they regulate their population. And, you know, it's just almost as many wolves are needed in that area and as this area, this a particular area can sustain, you know. So there aren't that many, no.
I think if there's a paradigm shift between the era that you and I grew up in and the next era, it's going from, as you said, binary thinking, like innocent or guilty, black or white, friend or enemy, to more interconnected ecosystem thinking. Like,
yes,
everybody is playing some kind of role, and let's look at it in terms more of balances.
Yes. Yes, I have a whole chapter in the film about the children and the next generation, the younger generation. And they, whenever I give outreach talks, and I do that in the community, and in the schools, and whenever I give those talks, the kids seem to get it. You know, they are like, of course, you know, they have a role to play. Of course they need to be around. Of course we need to be careful. Of course they're wild animals, but we need to live with them. And so it's been really interesting because children have actually asked me if they could say something for the film because they want to protect the wolves because they feel that they're so important for the ecosystem and they wanted to voice their opinion. So
you have made this film and you are taking it around to what, schools, government, community organizations, things like that?
Yes. Yes, I'll be, you know, bringing it to the larger community, into New Mexico, but also into the larger community. And I'm planning a trip to Montana and Oregon later on, then an East Coast trip in the spring. We are planning a trip introducing the film and the concept of, you know, that everybody belongs and everybody has a role in the ecosystem. And it doesn't have to be the Mexican gray wolf, but wherever I'll go, there will be an animal that, you know, has that role and that we need to make sure that this animal survives. So there, you know, it might not be the wolf everywhere I go, but there is that sense of urgency. You know, there's all these animals that are disappearing that we need in the ecosystem. So
Elke Doerr's film is called Stories of Wolves, The Lobo Returns, and it is screening this Friday, the 28th of October. It's at 7 o'clock. There's a reception and celebration of the film at 5:30. You could meet the filmmaker. And that's all at the State Land Office at 310 Old Santa Fe Trail. It's at Morgan Hall, which I guess is where the State Land Office is. And for more information, you can call the State Land Office at 505-827-5760. Elke Doerr, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.